Welcome to the RSP Cast. I'm Matt Waldman with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. Happy Independence Day to anyone, to everyone. Yesterday, it was a nice little holiday that we had, and I'm having a nice time here this afternoon chatting with my buddy Jay Moyer. Jay Moyer is a contributor at the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. You can find him on Twitter at Jay Moyer, JMOYERFB. That's his Twitter handle. And Jay has done some nice work on running backs lately, on some of the work that he's done in terms of running back and the coaching carousel. That's an article that's up at the RSP, looking at David Johnson. Also sleeper running backs, which was a really interesting look at how to identify sleeper running backs for not only for football, but for fantasy as well. And then some joint work that he did with his excellent videos that he puts out on Twitter. And he did something with Dwayne McFarland this morning that we put out here that is on utilization in the passing game for running backs. So today we're going to spend an hour just having a good conversation about the running back position. Jay, welcome so much to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, Matt, thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be here. You know, obviously look up to and have a ton of respect for your work. And, it's really just been great for me to be involved in what you're doing. And, very excited to get on here and talk about football. Can't go wrong doing that. So
That's for sure. And I'm excited as well. I mean, it's been fun to be able to add you to the site in terms of the work that you do. Jay is someone who has experience coaching football, and has a really nice grasp of, the strategy of the position of various positions and of the strategy of the game. And, I think that'll something that we'll see show up throughout his work as he continues to write for the RSP site and what you see from him on Twitter, in addition to, this conversation today. So, when it comes to running backs, why is it that you're interested in studying this position in terms of how they fit and how they function and, and your recent, real focus on that position in terms of what you're putting out there online and at the Rookie Scouting Portfolio site?
So as you mentioned, my background is, I've always been a football fan. I've always watched football my entire life, but I have a background in coaching, spent 7 years coaching, offense, defense, special teams, had some offensive design, play calling experience. And so for me, in the recent past, there have been several running back situations where you have a guy who really struggles 1 year or has a huge year 1 year, the coaching staff changes. And from one season to next, the guy's performance goes from one end of the spectrum to another. Two recent examples being Todd Gurley in the transition from Jeff Fisher to Sean McVay, where he went from a guy who was a sub 1,000-yard rusher despite being a featured back to an all-pro first-team running back in the matter of one offseason. Another recent example with David Johnson, and his success with Bruce Arians, and then the struggles he had last year with under a different offensive scheme working with Mike McCoy. And so, having the coaching background and just being interested in player evaluation, I find it very intriguing. The variations in scheme and how you apply certain players can have such dramatic impacts on their performance and their production. And so really, over the past several weeks, have been studying NFL offenses in the run game, both to sharpen my knowledge in regards to, common schemes and also more rare schemes employed by NFL teams. But then, really through an evaluative lens and assessing which types of running backs tend to do well and which types of systems. I find it very interesting to look at these things, and that's why I've been spending so much time doing it lately.
Yeah. So who are some of the running backs who, are good, really good fits for some of their schemes that you're seeing? I mean, which ones have really been the best match?
The three major types of run games in the NFL, and most teams run a variation of concepts. No team does just a single concept over and over and over again. But you have teams that run a lot of wide zone. These are sort of outside runs off tackle where the offensive line really tries to stretch the defense You know, the LA Rams obviously are a prime example of this. Kyle Shanahan built his run scheme. You know, his dad also built his run scheme around the same concepts. Then you have teams that run a lot of inside zone concepts, and these are, you know, runs going inside where the offensive linemen are blocking, and the running back is aiming at a certain area using vision, you know, quickness, balance to find the best hole and go straight forward. You saw Frank Gore do this. I mean, he's really, you know, savant at this. You saw him do this really well last year in Miami in an inside zone heavy scheme. Really to the surprise of a lot of observers, but if you understand his skills as a runner, you know, his success is not that surprising. And then you have teams like the Patriots that run a lot of gap style runs, you know, the most common run being power. And these are runs where the running back is sort of assigned to a specific gap to run through. The offensive line is typically blocking down using favorable blocking angles to create a lane. And so I think in terms of the actual scheme fits, they really stand out to me. You know, I already mentioned Todd Gurley. Gurley's a runner who is, you know, super explosive, one of the more explosive running backs you'll find. He has great balance, great agility, less so of a, you know, quick side-to-side darting runner. And those talents really fit well with a wide zone scheme where you stretch out the defense, you identify a hole and really burst through it and get upfield. And you've seen Gurley have great success with that. Not to mention the ways that he is applied in the passing game, you know, often lining up in the slot, utilizing his route running and pass catching skill. So that fit really stands out to me. You know, Sonny Michel is also very much, you know, get up the field. I'm not going to say straight line. You know, he has some agility side to side. But he's really good at attacking the line of scrimmage, getting through a gap and exploding upfield, sort of more curvilinear in his movement, as you often describe running backs. And I think a great observation, a great way to describe it. And so the Patriots having a gap-heavy scheme and utilizing him in that scheme really with strength. And you saw him have great success as a rookie where, you know, almost every snap he's in the game, he's running some kind of gap concept run between the tackles. So really interesting to see, you know, fits like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and, you know, it's funny that you talk about those guys. I mean, in terms of being able to just get downhill quickly and explode. And there is a level of movement that works well. Whereas what you said, you know, Todd Gurley, you may not see a ton of side-to-side agility, but he can plant hard and cut and make that hard execution of a cut. And I think that that's where, you know, the two differences between those players, another set of players that I would say that give you a really strong kind of stylistic difference would be guys like Devonta Freeman and Tevin Coleman, who, while they played in the same outside zone scheme, same wide zone scheme, early on in Tevin Coleman's career, you had a guy who was much more, his style was much more like Sony Michel's in the sense that he was more of a curvy linear mover in terms of how he played, and he didn't have great footwork in terms of being able to make hard cuts or alter his stride and set up the creases as he was, you know, working towards the line to set up his blockers. And he relied so much on his speed that I don't think he was as accomplished of a runner in that scheme, even though he played at it in Indiana. If you saw his efficiency, he was one of those guys that, you know, lots of losses, lots of small gains of, you know, of not even chain moving type of consequence. And then he'd bust out for like 50, 60, 70 yard gains. And he'd have a bulk of his yards based on, you know, breakaway gains in college that weren't going to come in the pros. But then he comes to the Falcons, and it's kind of the same thing, as he had to learn a little bit. And I know that there were people, I remember, who you know, when I would tell them he wasn't a good fit for an outside zone scheme, people were like, well, he played outside zone in college. How can you say that? And what I just explained is why, and it took him a little while to become a better player in that scheme, you know, because he of his movement skills and movement style and how he did that is – you know, I wonder if you think that players, at this point with the type of footwork they use and the style of footwork that they're really good at, whether it's a lot like throwing motion? Do you think it's like throwing motion where you can alter it a little bit, but you can't alter it a whole lot?
Yeah, and you often talk about, traits that are easy to correct and traits that are more difficult to correct. I think your observations on Tevin Coleman are spot on. And he's an interesting case study in the ability to improve, with vision, footwork, style of running. Because, early in his career, he did have a lot of trouble with identifying holes, using the leverage of blockers to set up runs. On his inside runs, his steps were often too far apart result of that, you get off balance and you can't really react to quick changes and changing pictures in the defense. And so you end up, not being able to make a second or third read and adjust on inside zone running plays. Well, I don't think that Coleman has become elite in those categories. I would say that his work last year showed dramatic improvement compared to what I saw in 2016 when he was paired with Kyle Shanahan. Where, he would have those big runs and he's electric. He can get upfield in the snap of a finger. You'll see him take away defenders' angles on a routine basis. When there's a hole there and he can access it, you get him in the open field, he's really difficult to deal with. What I saw this year was that he moved up more towards average in terms of his vision, his footwork, his understanding of leverage with blockers. And so he was able to access holes more frequently, even though they weren't quite as big as the running lanes that he saw in 2016 with Shanahan. And so, obviously he's reunited with Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco. And so I'm very interested to see how that improvement that he's shown in, sort of processing footwork shows up now that he's back in the wide zone running scheme. And Atlanta ran a fair bit of wide zone last year, and he showed improvement in those runs. I think he may build on the success that he had both in 2016 and 2018 and really have a good year in a backfield that, it's really hard to get a read on as far as who will earn the bulk of the carries there.
Is there anybody that you're looking at who's kind of underrated in terms of their abilities, even though they may not production wise, it may not show up really well from the data, but on the film, you look at them and go, that's a good running back in terms of, and maybe a good fit with what the scheme is, even if the blocking isn't great or something of that nature.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm sure that you have guys that you feel this way about. One guy that I just happened to be studying the other day because I was, looking at the Chicago backfield and studying David Montgomery a little bit, is a guy that I've seen you single out actually in the past, and I know that you were impressed with the work he did last year, was Mike Davis.
Yeah.
He was coming over from Seattle to Chicago. I mean, the stuff that Matt Nagy does in the running game where he's using a lot of misdirection, a lot of motion, running the field, creates pretty wide running lanes and also, uses his running back in the passing game very frequently. Mike Davis sort of fits that Kareem Hunt mold, from Hunt's rookie year where Nagy was offensive coordinator in Kansas City, where he's a guy with tremendous balance. He's a bigger running back, but still is relatively quick. He gets upfield quickly. I was surprised at how well his vision and footwork between the tackles has developed, given that early in his career he had injuries, didn't see a lot of playing time. When he did see playing time, he really struggled. I think he took a huge leap forward last year and really had some runs. I posted a run on Twitter the other day that was really about as spectacular as you can get running, inside. It's not technically inside zone. It's a run play called duo. It's a down blocking scheme, but same relies on the same types of skills for running backs.
Yeah.
Where he's making a first cut based on what he sees and is, you know, keeping his balance. He's not overcutting and missing holes when he does a jump cut. And then he makes a second cut that's just nasty and gets around the corner for, you know, around a 20-yard touchdown run. And I think that he's been sort of forgotten ever since David Montgomery was drafted. And I think that, you know, based on what I saw from him last year, if he can do those same things, I mean, you know, I would anticipate, not just be surprised, if he earns a significant chunk of the playing time there in Chicago and does a really, really good job with it.
Yeah, I can see that. It's funny, the play that you showed reminded me of something I had actually put on video of DeAndre Swift, and it was at the cutback point where he literally just flips his hips from facing downhill to the right side, and he did it so quickly. He was efficient at being able to bounce that outside, and it was. I mean, I could have shown both plays back to back, and it would have been a great example of just the technique of how good players, a lot of good running backs, have the skill to be able to open their hips up and flip them explosively so that they can maximize the space without even having to move their feet and just change direction that way. Now, in corollary to that is obviously a lot of people are very much enamored with the rookie prospects of David Montgomery. I've seen you say that, yeah, eventually I think Montgomery will be good enough to develop into a guy that will challenge for significant playing time. But what do you think Montgomery has to work on that some people are missing?
Let me start off by sort of singing some of his praises, because, you know, I think I got into some debate with people about Montgomery when I posted the video on Davis. The video on Davis was really just praising Davis, not necessarily criticizing Montgomery. Montgomery has excellent balance. You know, he's really up in the elite category in terms of balance, both, you know, running behind the tackles and also through contact. He has amazing agility. He'll make some cuts that are very rare to see for a running back. I think when you have those talents and you go through high school football, you go in the Big Ten, you're facing competition that's not quite as athletically gifted as what you'll see in the NFL, where defenders are, you know, one, two steps quicker. The pursuit angles catch up to you much more quickly. There were times in the Big Ten where Montgomery, you know, there would be a hole there for what would give you a 4 or 5 yard gain. And similar to what you see from Saquon Barkley, you know, he's taking the risky bounce opportunity or cutback opportunity, because if he can pull that off, it'll lead to a big play. Whereas Barkley has, you know, truly elite physical talents in terms of explosion, balance, acceleration, top end speed. You know, unlike anyone we've really ever seen, he can do that in the NFL. But even in the NFL, he still gets hit for a high percentage of, you know, negative runs, either losing yards or gaining no yards. But it's worth it for him because when he hits, it's a 70-yard touchdown.
And, yeah.
You know, I made a video on this specifically about comparing Barkley to Montgomery and showing Montgomery running with a similar style to Barkley, because he has that balance, he has that agility. But he doesn't have the explosion. And in fact, he has below average, you know, speed, acceleration for an NFL running back. And so if he is passing up the 4 yard gain and trying to make a dangerous cutback to gain 15 yards, you know, the times where he's hit for a loss are not going to be worth the breakaway run that gets 15 yards. It's only really worthwhile if you're running for a 70-yard touchdown. Because as you mentioned earlier, those negative runs put your offense off schedule. And so I think Montgomery's vision is good enough where if he gets more disciplined in his run schemes and takes those 4 or 5 yard gains, then his contact balance and agility will really earn him, you know, a lot of production. And I think being with Mike Davis, who's much more disciplined in his approach to run schemes, will really benefit Montgomery as he, you know, refines his craft with more athletic defenders who will take away a lot of those bounce and cutback angles that he's used to getting in the Big Ten.
Yeah, that makes sense. And certainly, yeah, I'm a big fan of Mike Davis, and I'm with you. I think it's going to be an interesting setup to see how these two vie for time as backs in a backfield that's already, you know, you could even say is headlined or at least has a special spotlight for Tarik Cohen, who in itself is worth, you know, probably worth some conversation in terms of his abilities. You know, he's a guy, you know, when I look at him, I think I know that no team's going to do it. And I understand why they're not going to do it. You know, he's electric in space. You know that he can catch the ball in the short and intermediate and occasionally in the deep ranges of the field. He could be a really nice option there, depending on who your quarterback is. But he's also a guy that I would be willing to bet. I mean, I remember Emory Hunt saying this, last year, saying, I bet if a team would use him as an every down back, he could be a, you know, 1,200, 1,300 yard rusher, could be a top 10 running back in terms of rushing yards based on his ability. And, you know, I know that there are a couple people who didn't really agree with that and spawned some debate. But, you know, I see him and Darren Sproles as players who, while you wouldn't necessarily want to use the player up that way necessarily, it would be kind of fun in just a vacuum to see them get that opportunity.
No, I totally agree. The interesting thing for me is I feel like Cohen's strengths, being so electric in space, being such a good receiver, you know, really dynamic playmaker, I think it makes him almost too valuable to Nagy's offense to stick him back there and hand him the ball 15, 20 times a game.
Yeah.
Because even when he's not touching the ball, he's influencing how the defense is approaching the rest of the offense. You know, they line him up in the slot. They do have him run deep at times. And, you know, the threat of him in space is so dangerous. It's, you know, I'm not going to say that he's like Tyreek Hill in Kansas City, but they use him in very similar ways, really threaten the defense and influence the defense to open things up for other people. So Tarik Cohen's role to me is sort of a given, but I view him almost as like a hybrid running back receiver type who obviously will line up in the backfield a fair amount. But then I think there's a secondary role for, you know, what Nagy did with Kareem Hunt, where it's more of a traditional running back. You know, he seems to have a very clear profile he's going for, which is a thicker back who has really good balance, can catch the ball well. All three of those guys, Montgomery, Davis, and Hunt, are in that category. And so I think Davis and Montgomery are vying for that role and will probably share that role in some split while Cohen, you know, is doing what he does. It's so valuable to their offense, both in the short and, you know, deeper zones, because, he, you know, he is just so dynamic.
Okay. So, you know, you talked about that certain backs, you know, certainly are, you know, really good fits for zone blocking. And certainly you've delineated to inside zone and outside zone, as well as talking about how there's some influence there also with down blocking, like duo, that they can kind of, you can put them in a family, in a broad family of kind of zone style type of running. And then there's gap style running of, like you said, power. We'll add trap and counter to that. Toss plays maybe even fit into that, though we could probably get in to say that toss and outside zone might have some similarities to a degree, but there's also some stark differences, I would bet, with that. But just you know, from a standpoint of looking at it as an overview, what are you looking for from a running back when it comes to him running gap plays? What's more important about gap play running backs? What do they need to be able to do that's different from them as zone runners?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question. And actually, I'm working on a piece for the RSP site that is focused on the Miami backfield with Kenyon Drake, Kalen Ballage, and how that competition will fare with Chad O'Shea coming from New England, where, you know, I'd say the hallmark of New England is they really design their offense and defense around the strengths of the players. Last year, you know, once they lost Josh Gordon and their receiving core was pretty depleted, they really designed their offense around a power running game, which really played to Sonny Michel's strengths. And he was really one of the most dynamic playmakers on their offense. And so I think there will be some variability in how they design their offense, but they were such a gap-heavy team that I expect that to continue as, to be the dominant run scheme that Miami employs in their backfield. Whereas Adam Gase ran a lot of zone concepts, ran a lot of inside zone, a lot of duo, which are inside runs that really are best run by a running back like Frank Gore, as I mentioned earlier, who has extraordinary balance, footwork, patience, really understands blocking leverage. You know, is quicker than fast and can really react quickly to changes that he sees in front of him. Because, you know, the hole is not specified, you're going here. It's really, okay, there's an area where we think the hole is going to be. You have to find that and get your body in position to access that hole and gain yardage on a consistent basis.
And, so and set up your blockers with your footwork to make your blocker's job a little bit easier by pressing deep enough to make it happen all at that same time.
Exactly. It's really fun to watch when running backs do it well. I was on I was talking to Dwayne McFarland, fellow RSP contributor, on a podcast the other day describing the various levels of vision that running backs have. And, you know, you'll have your running backs that can't find a hole when it's there. You have running backs that can find a hole when it's there. Then you have running backs that can find the first hole, and then if that closes, they can find the second hole or the third hole. And then the top level of vision and processing and footwork is a guy like Gore, who will go towards an area and sort of create a hole on his own by influencing the linebacker with his footwork, understanding where his blockers are coming from. And those running backs that can do that on a consistent basis, I mean, it's really just amazing to watch, because the amount of information that you have to process, you know, from visually seeing the defense, but then also keeping in line your body position, your balance, your footwork, being able to react. I mean, it's, to me, it's one of the most impressive cognitive athletic feats to be able to do that upper level of performance running between the tackles. So it's just, you know, super exciting to watch. But in terms of gap schemes, I think that, you know, less important to target those, you know, vision processing is always important. Understanding blocker leverage is always important, but it's a little less important when the hole is dictated for you and you say, okay, the gap is most likely going to appear between the guard and the tackle. And we just need you to time your attack through that hole to get into space and then, you know, use a move or use balance to evade a tackling linebacker, and then you're off to the races. And so you really want guys who are going to get downhill, attack the hole, break a tackle, and get into space. Darren McFadden, I've heard you talk about him. He's a great example of a guy who really, really struggled in zone concepts with the Raiders. You know, he was going to be a bust, and then Hugh Jackson came in, installed a power running game, and the guy put up Pro Bowl caliber production. Yes. Because he, you know, he's very top heavy, not great balance or quickness, but he's very, you know, dynamic in attacking downhill. And if you give him a crease, he can break a tackle and then he's gone.
And so, yeah.
In Miami's backfield, I think Kenyon Drake is sort of an example of a guy who's had struggles with processing and footwork and manipulating linebackers and understanding blocking leverage. And so I think gap schemes really play to his strengths as a runner, which are, you know, explosiveness, contact balance, evasiveness in the open field. You know, he's a guy that everybody knows, once you get him into space, he's very dynamic, as the Patriots learned last year the hard way on the Miami Miracle. And so I'm interested to see how his talents align with what Chad O'Shea does in Miami, because I do think it's a really good fit. And I think that if they run a power heavy scheme, he may be able to, you know, have the breakout that people have been anticipating, because you see his highlights in the open field and they look so amazing.
Yeah. And I love how you describe Frank Gore and in terms of what he's able to do. 'Cause when I look at running backs, I think about things like for zone schemes. You know, you mentioned you want balance, you want vision, you want footwork. And I want, you know, physically what that manifests to me, or how to break that down even further, I'd say, I want running backs who can flip their hips, you know, guys who can, you know, I often talk about how if you point the toe in a direction, the hips will follow in that direction. And it's hard for these backs sometimes, not only just to be able to physically flip their hips that dynamically, but it's also just the idea of being able to recognize when to do that. And so these backs like Gore, or I think eventually a guy like Montgomery, or a guy like Nick Chubb, or some other, you know, a lot more backs out there that I can, Ezekiel Elliott, they're backs that are able to know when they need to make a dynamic wide, you know, wide angled kind of explosive cut that may force them to cover a lot of space in a short, you know, within just one burst. And then guys who understand, and at the same time, be able to understand when to just take one step and make that efficient change of direction.
Yeah. Devontae Freeman, a guy that you mentioned earlier, another great example of a running back in that category. And you're spot on.
Yeah. Yeah. Those guys, to me, like the family of guys are like Frank Gore's, Devonta Freeman's, Nick Chubb's, Ezekiel Elliott's, even Peyton Barber. You know, I mean, I think Peyton Barber's a guy that, you know, I continue to champion and I talk about a lot, just because I think he's someone that has that skill and understanding down in terms of doing those types of skills. But I loved how you outlined the vision, because what also people don't understand when they think of vision, they just don't define it in enough categories. And I liked how you defined it in all those categories. And I'd add to it, you know, there's depth of vision and peripheral vision. You know, there are some guys who can read the linebackers and the safeties. And, you know, Jonathan Taylor out of Wisconsin's a guy I was seeing running on a play to the off tackle, where you could tell he saw the backside being sealed up well. He could see that he saw the safety's depth and was reading it well enough that he knew at that point that he had a one-on-one with one blocker on a defensive end. And instead of just hitting it back inside quickly, he really took his time with it so that he could get the maximum width of angle to cut back inside the defender. And that told me that he understood his surroundings well enough to maximize his gain. Whereas maybe if it were a different scenario, he might, you know, what I'll look for next time is that maybe if everything there's the same, but the difference is that maybe it's a third and one as opposed to a first and 10, maybe he'll just quickly hit it knowing that he just needs to get the yardage, you know, and showing the judgment. So vision to me is not only depth of angle, peripheral vision, and especially, which is what a backfield I want to talk about next that includes Gore in it, is Buffalo, is the ability to read those backside cuts, because that's the thing that's very difficult to see. The best running backs not only see the front side and middle of the field in terms of width and depth, but they also see the backside, and they can feel that backside and be able to make some wide backside cuts based on how they study the defense, understanding where the defense is flowing, and what their blocking scheme is designed to do. And it's a combination of seeing it, feeling it, and having faith and in what it is that your scheme is supposed to be doing. So, you know, there's those levels, and then we get into the whole decision making judgment down and distance. What is it that, you know, when things go wrong, how do you process that and within the scope of the play? And you're suddenly now talking about game management in the same way that quarterbacks have to be field generals. I think running backs, in an underrated way, the best ones are also very good field generals in terms of understanding what they need to, you know, what risks they can and shouldn't take. But, you know, moving forward with that, when we talk about backside cutting and width of vision and great width and depth of vision and decision-making, you know, two backs who have been great at it for the past 10, 12 years have been LeSean McCoy and Frank Gore. They're on the same team with a back in Devin Singletary, who I've described as slow, not very quick, not very big, not very strong. But when you talk about all the vision and the and how the footwork is tied to all those forms of vision, he's really good at that aspect of the game. So what do you think about Singletary? The fact that he's even getting mentioned as getting some reps with these two great running backs. Certainly we know that they're at the ends of their career, so they're not at their top of their games. But, you know, what do you think of his prospects, and what do you think of this year in Buffalo in terms of how this running back core is going to play out and the fits with these guys with what running back's trying to do, what Buffalo's trying to do?
Before I get to answering that specific question, you know, I was just hearing you talk about all the things that go into effective running back play. I mean, I just wanted to point out how remarkable it is that these guys can do those things on a consistent basis. I mean, it's really, like I said earlier, I think it's one of the most amazing things to watch when you have those running backs who function at that highest level. It's almost like those, you know, those old Kung Fu movies where Bruce Lee is fighting, you know, 50 people, and he somehow sees the punch coming from behind him, blocks that, you know, he kicks the guy who's running in from his left side. And when those backs can do that stuff, it's just, for me, that's the kind of stuff where I'll just watch, you know, I have the Game Pass app. I'll just watch a play 10, 15 times just in awe of what these guys are doing. You know, guys that I think are younger that do that well, I think you pointed this out too with one of your posts, is Josh Jacobs really processes well through multiple levels, and he'll be planning his next move on the safety, you know, while he's giving a stiff arm to the linebacker, and saw Kerryon Johnson do a lot of those same things last year in Detroit. And it's fun to watch, man. But in terms of Buffalo, I mean, I hadn't really thought of it the way that you framed it, but I do think that Singletary being paired with McCoy and Gore is a really interesting combination, because I think that Singletary has elements of both of those players' games in how he plays. And it's interesting because, you know, Devin Singletary was super productive in college, and they had a running back behind him who's much more dynamic in terms of, you know, physical traits in Kareth White, and a guy that got some buzz as being a better prospect than Singletary, probably because of those, you know, physical attributes. Singletary really dominated him in terms of production and opportunity in college. And so when you have a guy, and this sort of gets to something I wrote about in that running back sleeper article on the RSP site, when you have a guy who has such poor measurable athletic traits, but is so successful and keeps earning opportunities, you really have to ask yourself, why is this guy doing that? And what are we missing when we keep trying to get the bigger, faster, stronger guy in there, but, you know, Devin Singletary or Frank Gore keeps holding him off? And really it comes down to how those guys function in the run scheme, and they're all those things that you talked about leading up to that question of processing, footwork, being able to flip the hips and go. And I think Singletary does those things really well, as do Frank Gore and LeSean McCoy. You know, whether Singletary can be effective in the NFL, being small and slow and not really that explosive, is yet to be seen. But I think that he will learn a lot from Gore and McCoy, although I think he's already naturally good at a lot of these things to begin with. And I wouldn't be surprised if he has a lot more success for a lot longer time than a lot of running backs who are bigger, faster, stronger, and that people keep bringing in to try to replace him. So it'll be interesting to see how he functions in that Buffalo offense, but I think that he'll produce more than people think he will for a while. And a guy that I compared him to is actually Jalen Richard on the Raiders.
Yeah.
Drafted free agent, you know, very difficult to earn opportunity as a running back who's undrafted, but he has stuck around. He's very productive. you know, has a lot of those same traits with vision, cutting ability, obviously is a very good receiving back. But, you know, fits in that same category, I would say, for those types of players.
Yeah, I think Rashard's quicker, but it's going to be interesting for me because that's the, to me, Singletary is the guy that when I look at how I evaluate you, you know, there's the gut feeling of how you think it's going to go. And then there's the process that you take to, you know, to evaluate a player. And certainly there are times where my gut feeling, I hope that my process can define some of the things that my gut feeling is seeing, you know, about a player, but there's always going to be times where there's a gap. And for me, the extremes in his athletic ability versus his vision is to me, one of the most fun observations that I'm going to have is because I think his vision is fantastic. And if his athletic ability was on par with his vision, he'd easily be one of the top prospects I've ever studied. I mean, but he's just not it, but they're so far apart that I'm hoping to see vision win out, you know, and him, that, which would mean that he ends up having a really strong career. I have no doubt that if he doesn't make it in the NFL, if he wants to go to the CFL, he will have a long career there. You know, playing at in another league where maybe the athletic ability isn't quite as high. But at the same token, you know, the way he sets things up, it's going to be fascinating to me to watch. And I agree with you that, you know, if anything, he'll learn more from McCoy and Gore in the film room, watching how they look at things. Cause Gore has been a film fanatic since, from what I read recently from a Sean Tomlinson article at Bleacher Report, you know, he's been a guy who's been trying to study the game with just an insatiable thirst for it.
Think about anything you could do off the field to get better. Frank Gore is doing that.
Yeah. And he's been doing it for like 8-9 years now.
Exactly. And people wonder why he never goes away.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and to me as an older guy, it's fun now to watch him and go, I hope he keeps playing. I mean, I hope he keeps playing well enough that they go, wow, he was the best back in Buffalo this year. It would be kind of fun to see that happen, even if the data isn't great on him. I'd like to continue to see that happen. But I have to think that his way of studying, his way of preparing is something that, you know, if Devin Singletary's wise enough for his years to look at this and go, I need to be doing what Frank Gore has been doing for the past 8 years. I need to start now because this is the model, the role model for my game right here. And then the same thing goes with probably LeSean McCoy's vision and understanding what McCoy's looking for and how McCoy's ability to make these great cutbacks and reads at the line of scrimmage, how Singletary can use that to his advantage. He may not make them as dynamically as McCoy does, but he can use some of what McCoy did and put those within the limits of his physical game. And I think that that's what's going to be probably one of the most interesting things, you know, coming to that. You know, I mentioned Barber as a player that I like, Peyton Barber. But what do you think of the Bruce Arians scheme and fit with the running backs there? Is there any of those backs that you're looking at, you go, that's a good fit for one of these backs that are currently there, or is it a situation where you're looking at more and saying, I just need to see the offensive line improve enough, or does this scheme going to help out this offensive line?
Well, one thing that I really like about Bruce Arians is he really adapts his scheme to his personnel, and you saw that in the way that he used David Johnson back in 2016. Both in the running game and the passing game. David Johnson is a guy whose talents are really well suited to an outside zone scheme and running off tackle. He's very explosive, very agile, has great balance, and really is good at understanding defender leverage in the open field. But when you start running in between the tackles, you know, his steps are often a little too long. I don't know that he processes the movement of the linebackers extremely well. You know, he came up in college playing wide receiver a bit. So really dynamic in space, but less so of the Frank Gore type. And so Bruce Arians really let him do what he did best, ran a lot of runs off tackle, a lot of wide zone, used him heavily in the passing game. And he had a lot of success. And I think Bruce Arians will not do that same, those same things schematically, because he doesn't have a David Johnson at running back in Tampa Bay. But I think he'll do the same, where he really applies his running backs in the ways that suit their strengths. And I think Peyton Barber is an excellent runner between the tackles. You know, he's not super dynamic in open space, but he has a good ability to, you know, have good disciplined footwork, manipulate linebackers, work effectively between the tackles. So I would anticipate that Arians will allow him to run a lot of inside zone, duo style concepts, really capitalize on his skills as a runner. Ronald Jones was an early pick last year. I think he has to make leaps before he's a functional NFL running back. I'd read something you wrote that pointed this out. He was showing a lot of hesitation. I wasn't sure if it was related to, you know, lack of knowledge or comfort in the scheme, or I don't know. Sometimes it felt like he was worried about contact. But he really didn't attack. He really wasn't attacking. And when you watch him play, you know, there are holes that are there. Their offensive line struggled, but there are holes that are there that an average running back would be able to access. And he's sort of, you know, having inefficient steps, wasted steps in the backfield, hesitant through the hole, loses his balance a lot. And really just, you know, if the play is blocked for 4 yards, he'll get you 1 yard. Yeah. Sort of consistently over and over again. And, you know, I saw some of that in college, but it was much more pronounced in the NFL, and I don't see an easy fix for those problems, you know, between year one and year two, despite the positive buzz that has been generated for him in offseason minicamp. Bruce Anderson is a guy who I think may be able to earn playing time ahead of Ronald Jones, and I'm not going to say he's David Johnson, but it sort of fits that David Johnson archetype a little bit better. As a receiver and as a runner. And so he may be someone that surprises. And I know you are a fan of him, so I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on how you think he'll fit down in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I think Johnson, or excuse me, Anderson has that opportunity to really carve out a niche there, especially, you know, and when you look at minicamp, when people start talking about the guy, you know, talking about the guy in minicamp and he's working hard and that they're looking for a lot more from him. Oftentimes you don't know what you want to wait till training camp to see whether that there's a drum beat there. Cause it's, you want to look at the connection between minicamp and training camp and see if it's still there. If not, then what you can discern is that the minicamp discussion was more of a sense of, we need to pump up the confidence of this player. We want this player to know that he still means something to us. We want him to work at his craft. We want to give him some encouragement because he didn't do well last year. And I'm kind of waiting for August to see what May and June actually meant for Ronald Jones. Cause I'm with you. I need to see more proof of that stuff. When I look at Anderson, we know he can catch. We know that he can be used in ways that Arians would be happy to utilize him. And he might end up in a situation where they kind of utilize him and Barber at the same time, depending on different types of looks. I don't think they're going to do it a ton, because I think wanting to have, Evans and Godwin on the field at the same time, along with, you know, probably being able to put Brait and, I can't remember the tight end from Alabama.
OJ Howard.
Yeah, OJ Howard. I could see them having a big lineup with those four receivers on the field, and then that gives them some more love, you know, in terms of what they can do blocking in the running game and going that route. depending on how good of a player like Scott Miller or some of the other slot-like receivers that they have in camp right now do. But at the same time, you could see how maybe they look at a guy like Anderson, who was so good off the line of scrimmage as a receiver, that in terms of his separation skills, I thought he was so – I thought it was one of those things where – how would I best put this? Imagine if you were on a you were on a practice field and superheroes were real, or mutants were real, and you saw like Wolverine at the line of scrimmage pass rushing, and you saw him extend his claws basically, and in about 3 to 4 reps, and then at that point, you're the coach of that team, and you're like, you know what? Go ahead and shut him down for the rest of the week. I don't want anyone seeing what I just saw, because I want to track it. When I saw Bruce Anderson play the first set of practices before he hurt his leg and had like some muscle pull that he didn't practice the rest of the week, I was thinking no one could literally stop him getting initial separation off the line of scrimmage. I did not see that on his tape at North Dakota State, but in the practice, it was just like, he can't be covered. I've said this a number of outlets, is the only place he could get covered was when a safety charged up and timed it as well as he could to just knock Anderson on his ass before he could even get off the line. And that wasn't even really the way the drill was supposed to go. So the safety was kind of even cheating there, just to basically, he didn't want to look bad because that's how good Anderson was playing. And it was kind of like similar to me, like with Marvin Jones beating people deep over and over at the Senior Bowl. People hadn't seen enough of that on tape during his junior and senior year because they moved his role to being a more of a possession guy, when as a freshman, freshman and sophomore, he was much more of a deep threat, and you could see that on tape. So I'm wondering if we're going to see Anderson in training camp just start lighting it up on these underneath routes, and if he's consistent enough in the preseason, the best case scenario to me is, so next thing you know, we could see Barber and Anderson on the field at the same time, but Anderson being used more as that slot guy, the guy you move around a little bit more, kind of like Tariq Cohen, just not as explosive, but nifty enough as a receiver that he could give linebackers fits. And if that happens, suddenly we're going to see that kind of a role. But I think he can run between the tackles well enough that, maybe not. I don't know if he's going to be a great inside zone duo type of player, but I think he has enough burst. I think he'd be, honestly, I wouldn't mind seeing him in more gap oriented concepts. So if they wanted to vary things up and run a little bit more power, a little bit more trap, I think he'd be decisive enough to hit those and have just enough shake to be able to set those up and do it in an efficient, creative way. So I'm just kind of fascinated to see what they determine from Anderson as the best fit for him, if he's showing up dynamically enough that they say, we want to get him involved in the offense.
Yeah, and, obviously coming in as an undrafted guy, he's swimming uphill, but I think it's a really good fit. And when you talk about the personnel they have, with O.J. Howard, who is great run-blocking tight end, very good receiving tight end, Cameron Brate, who's more of a hybrid slot tight end, really makes his money in the passing game. But then a couple big receivers in Godwin and Evans. And then you look at what Arians did in Arizona, where he oftentimes used personnel packages to dictate defensive personnel packages, and then took advantage of that because David Johnson, such a facile receiver, both from the backfield and when lined up out wide. And so, you're manipulating coverages to where he's getting one-on-one coverage with a strong safety or one-on-one coverage with a linebacker. And he's such a skilled receiver that, he can win those matchups, whether it's running slant, whether it's running a fade, or, running a screen route from the backfield. He can exploit those matchups on a regular basis. And if Anderson can bring that type of receiving ability, then, his his weaknesses in the run game may not be as important as his strengths are as a receiver, because with the versatile personnel they have at tight end and receiver already, if you then add a running back who can really excel as a receiver, you know, you come out with 12 personnel, one running back, two tight ends. Often teams are going to respond to that with, you know, seven defensive front type of players, linebackers or defensive linemen. And then, you know, you have a linebacker typically either guarding one of your tight ends or guarding one of your – or guarding your running back. And I'd say all three of those players, the running backs and tight ends, you know, Anderson and the two tight ends can beat a linebacker pretty consistently. And so Arians is very creative, and I don't think he would have any trouble taking advantage of that if Anderson can prove he belongs and, you know, really let his strengths shine in the preseason and training camp.
Cool. I know that there's a lot more that we could talk about. We're going to bring you back on to talk more about this position and looking at, you know, the various running backs around the NFL. But is there anything that you were thinking about when we first started this podcast that you wanted to talk about and hope that we would broach that we just haven't, just due to time and some of the tangents that we took?
You know, Matt, honestly, I think we could talk about any backfield or offense in the NFL and have a great time and a really fun conversation doing it. So hopefully we can do this again. I mean, there are too many things that I could think of in my mind to really focus on one now in this last few minutes. And I think we covered, you know, a pretty wide range of topics and players. So I'll hopefully look forward to talking to you about some of the other backfields, some of the other talent archetypes, you know, sometime in the near future.
That sounds good to me. And we'll leave it up to our listeners for, so what I'll ask you guys is, if, you know, those of you who enjoyed this show, you know, email me or tweet me and let me know who you'd like to hear Jay and I talk about in the next time we meet up for the RSP cast. So, on behalf of Jay, you know, we want to thank you for listening. You can always rate and review the RSP cast on iTunes, on Blueberry, on, let's see, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and Podbean. I believe that's the range of stuff that's out there. And of course, you can check out Jay's work at mattwaldmanrsp.com. And, you know, of course, there's also the YouTube channel where you can see a lot of the work that I'm putting out on 2020 college prospects. I've already looked at about 20 running backs thus far and have given little, you know, previews and analysis of specific parts of many of those players available at Matt Waldman's RSP film room. So once again, thank you guys for listening. You're absolutely awesome. And I want to give a special thank you to Jason Graves, who is an RSP subscriber who I met in Montreal last week. My wife and I both got caught colds while we were in Montreal for the week. And I got over mine a little earlier than she did. And so there was a concert that she couldn't attend. And we decided, yeah, why not? Let's see if anybody in the Montreal area wanted to show up. And Jason happened to live not far from where I was staying and not far from where the performance was. And we got a chance to hang out. I made a new friend. And that's one of the things that I really enjoy about the readers that I have. And is that, you know, I just really have an awesome base of readers who you know, that it's nice to feel like that you can make new friends, you know, with, and be able to show up in a city far away from where you live and be able to just say, you know, an hour away from an event and say, you know, would you like to go with me? And, you know, and be able to have a really good time doing that. So thanks again to Jason, really good guy. And thanks again to all of you for listening and, you know, participating in this in terms of this venture that I've been doing for the past 15 years. You guys have a nice week.